1029 The Hog presents the Bob and Brian Binge.
Brought to you by Johnson Centrifugal Technologies. Looking for a new career with great benefits? Apply now at jctjobs.com.
There is a lot of music news to cover this week, so we bring in our expert like we do every Friday morning, Gary Graff. Good morning, Gary.
Good morning. How are you guys?
We're good. We're dandy.
All right. There's the Eddie Van Halen thing. We'll get to that in a minute. I want to cover stuff that might get run over because we'll go way too long with the Eddie stuff. Johnny Nash passed away this week, too.
Yeah, I'm glad you can see clearly about that.
Yeah,
Johnny Nash, you know, who was one of the first non-Jamaican artists to record in Kingston and to record reggae music in Kingston. Of course, he had the big breakthrough hit in 72 with I Can See Clearly Now. He passed away the same day as Eddie Van Halen. And so that's, you know, much like Farrah Fawcett on the same day as Michael Jackson, you know, kind of gets short shrift for somebody who deserves at least notice, you know, if not the same level of celebration we're giving to Eddie Van Halen. You know, it should have at least be acknowledged that he passed away, too.
I think WGN used I Can See Clearly Now when they moved their tower to their broadcast tower, to the Sears Tower.
They may well have. I mean, I've heard it on so many weather reports and things like that.
I wonder how many glass cleaners
a commercial.
Used it.
Yeah.
And it's been in plenty of movie soundtracks. It seems like it's popped up over the years.
It's a great song.
And it gets played all the time on the radio yet.
Yeah. No, it's a fabulous song, and he did such a great version of it. You know, and he wrote it. A lot of people, you know, some people thought that maybe he was, some American who went to Jamaica, you know, and stole a reggae song, but Johnny Nash wrote it and produced it. So.
And what's his connection with Bob Marley?
I think just they met, and Marley invited him down, and that's where he, they partied together apparently down in Jamaica.
Can you imagine what that was like, partying with Bob Marley in his hometown in his prime? Good
luck. You probably couldn't see clearly.
For quite a while.
He did, Johnny Nash, by the way, did sign, you know, not just Bob Marley, but Peter Tosh, Bunny Wailer, Rita Marley to songwriting publishing contracts back in the 70s, too. I think in the 60s, actually.
Where was he from?
He was from Houston.
Houston.
Because he passed in Houston, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Today would be John Lennon's 80th birthday?
80th birthday today. Now, there's something to think about. There's been a lot of celebration about it. There's some special releases. There's a new compilation, Give Me Some Truth, that has new remixes done by Yoko Ono and Sean Lennon, you know, of all Lennon hits. But there's been a lot of celebration. Very nice broadcast this week. Sean Lennon, his youngest son, took to the BBC, and he interviewed Paul McCartney and Elton John, you know, to talk about his dad and John Lennon and everything those guys did together. Some really good interviews, and you're well worth seeking out on the internet. And, you know, it's one of those things you wonder what he would have been doing.
I think a bad interviewer could get credit for doing a great interview with either Elton John or Paul McCartney, just because they have so many experiences and they're so gigantic.
Chris Farley, Remember When?
Yeah, that was great.
Those guys know how to, you know, especially McCartney has a well-deserved reputation, you know, as a charmer in interviews, and that's, you know, he knows very much how he wants to present himself, and he accomplishes it every time. But he usually has great stuff to say, so you don't care.
In fact, didn't Chris Farley interview Paul?
Yeah, he was the interview.
That was the famous,
remember when you? Yeah,
yeah, that was great.
Yeah. Remember when you were in the Beatles? That was cool.
Well, is there a bigger money songwriting duo than McCartney Lennon?
Bacharach David are up there for it. You know, Rodgers and Hammerstein, of course, when you get into the estates and things. But they're up there.
Okay,
without a doubt.
Led Zeppelin won the Stairway to Heaven case?
Yep, it basically came to a non-ending ending. The U.S. Supreme Court elected not to hear the appeal. So the decision, you know, reverses back to the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, which ruled that Led Zeppelin did not infringe on the copyright of Spirit's Taurus in writing Stairway to Heaven.
I know you're not a lawyer, but is that the end of it then?
Yes.
That's it.
Yeah, I mean, I think there is recourse. There is yet still recourse, but nobody thinks they're gonna take it. you know, it's been ruled against. The thing the appeal hinges on is that the jury in the original district court case was not presented with the songs in the right way. They didn't hear recordings of the songs, you know, to compare them to each other. They heard live performances of the songs by, like, a local musician.
You've heard those same recordings?
I have.
How would you have ruled?
You know, I probably would have ruled in Led Zeppelin's favor with the caveat that, you know, man, it would be nice if you guys threw them a bone. Because, yeah, there's some grounds here. You know, not enough to give them a win, but...
Do we have any idea what dollar amount Stairway to Heaven has generated for Led Zeppelin? It had to be introduced in court, right?
Like, you know, I haven't seen that. So, you know, I don't know.
Because I just wonder, because you would have to base the, I'm quoting you, bone off of what revenue has been generated by the song, by the band, right?
Right.
And maybe you give them what? 4%, 5%, 10%
would be a percentage. Give them $1 million.
$1 million.
Walk away.
Okay, we're not saying you did anything wrong, but it'd be nice if you gave them $1 million.
Yeah, here, you know, we're sorry we hurt your feelings.
But I didn't do anything wrong, right?
We're Led Zeppelin. We're richer than God here. We're nice guys. You know, I'm sure they don't want to do that, and I'm sure that after all the appeals, they are not, you know, they are not, you know, predisposed to do anything nice, just out of the kindness of their hearts.
You talked to AC/DC yesterday?
I did, early in the morning, too, like 5:30 your time.
Did you have to yell into the phone?
Not at all.
Okay.
Not at all. Brian Johnson's hearing device sounds like it's working like a charm. They had, even just before the pandemic hit, they had done some rehearsals in, I think it was the Netherlands, you know, just kind of working the new songs up for live performance and checking out how it would work with him and his hearing device, and apparently it went swimmingly, and they really were looking forward to announcing a big tour that, of course, they're not. they're planning it. I think they're hoping they can get out next year, but, you know, like so many of the bigger acts now are looking at 2022 as being the likely return. I made the point to them that, you know, this does give them time to record yet even another album. And was greeted with a great deal of laughter.
Yeah, it's something to do anyway.
Yeah, well, yeah, why not? I mean, if you're in the groove, it's cool that this new album, Power Up, which is coming out November 13th, is the songs were all from riffs that Angus and Malcolm Young, you know, who passed away a couple years ago now, you know, they had created while writing for the other album. So, you know, it feels... So I've had a chance to hear the whole album, and it's an AC/DC album. It's exactly what it should be, and exactly what we want.
So Britney Spears, former estate manager, thinks she should be cared for
forever. Yeah, there's a guy named Andrew Wallet. He was the estate manager for a long amount of time, and in fact, he's the focus of a lot of what's going on with legalities, because Jamie Spears, the father, who is the conservator, had asked for Wallet to be reappointed as co-conservator of Britney's estate. You know, Britney's attorney, you know, says, you know, calls this guy Wallet uniquely unsuitable for that role.
Really?
He meanwhile did an interview, you know, with I think it was with yeah, it was with the Daily Mail in the UK, saying that, you know, he said she's not capable of signing documents and making decisions for herself, and that the most important thing to do now is to protect her assets.
Okay, hold on. Stop the show here. If she is not capable of any of these things, why are they putting her on stage to perform like an animal act then? Because
she's capable of doing that and raising money for her estate that all these people get a little bit from.
It seems wrong that if somebody is not capable of running their life to just, we'll get her on stage at 8 o'clock every night for the shows. It's, you know, and then we'll put her back in her cage when she's done, right, and we'll take care of her until the next show. That just seems wrong, doesn't it?
Yep.
Thank you. All right.
You know, but is it surprising? No. Sad, but not surprising.
Is she married? She got anybody
no.
going?
Right no, now? she does have a boyfriend who I think she's been with for a little while.
How okay. would that work if they decide to get married? Could he also be the conservator?
I don't. You know, that would be that. You know, I'm sure that goes to court in itself, and he would petition to be her guardian, or you know,
then at least to get the whole operation in one household.
Okay, let's say he marries her only to wrestle control of her estate and her
career. Kind of like being marrying somebody to get him a green card, right?
Yeah,
that would be bad.
Yeah, but only you'd be getting yourself, you know, the bank, the keys to the vault.
You know, it's one of those things. That whole scenario sounds. What I would say to the guy is, you know, be careful what you ask for because you might get it.
But do you want her to not do anything during the day?
I don't know.
And instead of getting out performing, which she apparently...
Well, no, I mean, you know, listen, she can still perform if she still likes to perform. And if performing is what pays for her life, then why not do it?
Well, because keeping her in a cage and prodding her out on the stage just to sing and then throwing...
I think it's not quite that bad.
It's kind of like, remember on This Old House, getting back to This Old House, when Steve Thomas went down to Mexico and there was a guy standing in a tub of water up to
like
his armpits
making
and he was stomping clay to make tiles out of.
Yeah.
And Steve Thomas said, well, it actually looks kind of fun. Remember that?
Yeah. That's kind of what I think it works for.
That's the same category that I throw that into. No, she likes to perform.
Well, I think she... I don't know her.
I know.
But can I say I think she does?
Okay. Sure, you can. Of
what does she
can.
Want to do? She said once upon a time she wanted to be a crime scene investigator.
She wanted to be a forensics investigator.
Because she watched, you know, CSI once.
Yeah. We had a go at that.
Yeah?
Yeah. Okay, the big story of the week. Eddie Van Halen passed away. Not really a surprise, but still a surprise.
Right. I mean, you know, it's one of those things Well, we didn't know he was sick. We heard he was sick. So, you know, and we never had, you know, real confirmation. It wasn't spoken about a lot, but it was kind of out there. So yeah, to hear he passed away, I mean, I had written an obituary for Billboard some months ago during one of the death rumors. You know, you get a call, you get an email, you know, we better write this up because it sounds like it's going to happen any day. It didn't. At that time, but there have been a bunch of those, you know, there were a bunch of those scare rumors that, you know, over the past decade, really, that, you know, his demise was imminent. And, but it did, you know, it did happen on Tuesday, and Eddie, dead at 65, passing away from cancer. And, you know, as we're seeing the kind of, you know, mourning and celebration that we see for really only the biggest names, maybe not, you know, quite as much universally as a Michael Jackson or even a David Bowie, but still in the upper echelon here. I mean, it made all the network news. You know, it's being talked about. He did transcend just being a rock star and was a known icon, you know, around the world and in quarters where they may not know a lick of his music, but they know who he is.
Where would you rank him as far as guitar players?
You know, definitely,
in history.
Definitely top 10. You can make a really good case for top 5. You know, I think he's in there. He is probably at the moment the last of the rock gods that we've had. I mean, you think about maybe Slash, but I don't think Slash has ascended to the same heights of, and when I say rock god, I mean rock guitar god. I don't know that Slash is quite up there in the... Slash is an icon in terms of a personality. As a guitar player, not as much as Eddie Van Halen. And then the new breed of guitar heroes, you know, the John Mayers, the Jack Whites, the Dan Arbucks, the Gary Clark Jr., are great players, but very different in terms... They're not rock gods. Eddie was a rock god, you know, and, you know, it's one of those things that if somebody ever asked you, okay, what is rock and roll, you could show them a picture of Eddie Van Halen.
Eddie was actually too early on, I'll say, because Eddie went through his dark period, we'll say, where you saw him, you're like, oh my God, look at Eddie Van Halen, he looks terrible. But when they first showed up, I remember seeing that guy for the first time and going, that's the guy who's playing guitar? He just didn't look the part. He had long hair, but he just, I don't know, he didn't look dangerous enough, I guess.
Yeah, I don't know.
No?
I mean, they smiled a lot. Van Halen
they did,
smiled a
right,
lot.
They did.
than the average metal band.
Maybe that's what it was.
Eric Clapton, Jimmy Page, Jeff Beck. You know, they weren't big smiley guys. You know, but Van Halen was a party band, and Eddie's playing worked within that concept.
I've heard a couple of different stories about him playing on Michael Jackson's Beat It. The first one was he was not paid. He just showed up and did it because Quincy Jones asked him to. The other one was technically he was paid. He got a case of beer and dance lessons.
I think he got what I have heard about it, and is he got money. You know, there's a third story. He got his rate. He did. I mean, it was on the up and up. This is a professional Quincy Jones production. You know, they weren't going to pimp a musician. He may have gotten a case of beer, you know, and some dance lessons. But, it was a big – that certainly was the song and performance that vaulted him into the mass pop consciousness, you know, before he was a rock guy who other people knew about because Van Halen had a bunch of big hits. But it was Beat It where the pop world really glommed on Eddie Van Halen. And, you know, that also came concurrent to Jump.
How much was that? 2 years before that album came out for Van Halen?
Same time?
I don't remember.
Thriller came out like late November, December 82, and Jump came out in 83.
Right? Okay, yeah. That was really when they just got to be bigger than life.
Right.
How often did you talk to Eddie? How many times did you speak with him?
I'd say, 6 to 8 over the years. I did. You know, my great Eddie memory is the closest I ever came to a hole-in-one playing golf was during a round with Eddie. And it lipped out the back of the cup. But, so it's nice enough to have that memory. Imagine if it had gone in.
Sure.
And that was fun. As usual, what happens, sales and streams of Van Halen's music is up more than 6,100%, since he passed away. It goes without saying you're going to see more of that in the coming days. And then Irving Azoff, who was Van Halen's manager, he has hinted at the possibility of more music. He just pointed out to the world that, there was a lot of recording that went on over the years, and he himself, Irving, doesn't know exactly what there is, but that he's sure that Wolfgang Van Halen, and then Alex Van Halen, Eddie's brother, are going to dip into the vaults to see what there is and maybe put something else out.
Well, Eddie built his own home studio years ago.
5150.
So he would go out, and they said he had unbelievable amounts of stuff that he just recorded.
Oh, yeah.
Just out there by himself.
There's probably a great guitar album, like an instrumental guitar album that, where it's just Eddie messing around. And it'd be interesting to hear some of that stuff. Sammy Hagar, by the way, did let it be known that he and Eddie had buried the hatchet. They had a really bad relationship for a very long time, more than 15 years. But, Sammy put out a note right after he died that said that he and Eddie had begun texting to each other. He called it a love fest, but they had both agreed not to tell anybody because they didn't want to stir up rumors about a musical reunion that wasn't going to happen. And then he mentioned that, Eddie also asked Sammy not to let anybody know about his health. And then about a month ago, Eddie stopped responding to the text, and Sammy felt something was up, and then he said he had reached out last week, and then didn't hear back, and he just had a feeling that something bad was about to happen.
And he was right.
Yeah, yeah.
So, all right, Gary, we're out of time.
All right, we'll see you guys. Have a good weekend.
All right, very good.
Talk next week.
Who are the Lions going to lose to? The Lions are off this week, like the Packers, right? Okay.
They'll still find a way to lose, but not
this week. All right, Gary, we'll talk to you next week.
Okay.
Hey, Gary.
Gary Graff, our music expert, every Friday morning.